Is it cold enough for you in the mornings? Let me tell you what. I got a chance to get out and sit in a tree stand for a few hours, and I was not ready for 47 degrees. Sorry. Just been a long, hot summer, and all of a sudden it seems like, and I like it. Don't get me wrong. I love this fall weather, but boy, give me some time to get used to it. But it was a good morning in the stand, and I hope a lot of you have been able to get outside, and haven't let an arrow fly yet, and haven't pulled the trigger, but it's been worth it just getting up and watching the woods wake up in the morning. So welcome to Woods and Water, South Carolina. It's another Saturday afternoon here on 94.5 WGTK, The Answer in Greenville. Glad you're tuned in, and hope you're having a good weekend. I am actually had a little change in plans this week, and I did not get to take my daughter out for her first deer hunt. So instead, I recorded today's show, and about right now, we're getting ready to go back into the tree stand, unless she's already connected. So yeah, I guess I could call in a live report, get Dave to plug it in, but we'll save that for next weekend. But anyway, I'm glad you're tuned in and listening. It is cold out there. I mean, I did put on my base layer, you know, what you used to call your long johns. Had my base layer on and just a shirt and a pair of pants over top of that. And it was kind of chilly. And to make it matters even worse, walking in, I was a little late getting in. We've all been there and done that, but I walked into the middle of a bunch of them. And I was in the dark trying to get to my stand without flashlight, got tangled up in a bramble briar, and tripped and almost fell. And the deer evidently didn't like that too much because I had, I don't know, three or four on one side of me start blowing at me and running off, and two or three on the other side of me start, you know, it was just. So by the time I got up to stand, I was pretty well upset with myself and probably didn't pay as good of attention as I should have, but it was great. You know, the birds were out. It was cold. Sun came up. Woods kind of came alive. It's just a great day to be alive when you can get out in the woods. And if you were wondering, I was dead wrong last weekend when I said all the acorns would be sitting on the ground. At least if you're Columbia North, I haven't been hunting in the low countries, so I don't know, but my acorns were just, trees are just drooping, my white oaks are just drooping with acorns. So there's going to be a lot of acorns on the ground here. I don't know if the deer will get them eaten up in time, but there's a ton of them. And to even end the day, the sit Wednesday morning, I got down and started out, and I got buzzed by two F-16 fighting falcons, probably out of Shaw Air Force Base or McIntyre or something. They were low and loud, and the sound of freedom. Gotta love it. And I wanted to remind you guys, if you're climbing a tree, there's two things you really need to do. You really need to have a tree stand safety harness on. If you're in a position where you can have a lifeline attached to that tree, you need to have that on too. Climb with that safety strap on. If you've got to take time to slide it up the tree as you go and slide it down as you come back down. There's been several pictures out there of people falling already this year. And there was another picture out there of a two-part stand. The foot part had slid down the tree, you know, and he's left with sitting on his seat. And that's the other thing. If you're in a two-piece climbing stand, go ahead and attach something to that to keep those two parts together. I've only had that happen once where I lost the foot part and was sitting there in the seat going, now this is going to be interesting. But you figure out how to get down. But anyway, those are two things, just simple reminders, just to stay safe while you're out there deer hunting, and because any successful trip is one where you come home at the end of the day. And with that, let's take a few minutes and go to the calendar. There's, as always, just a lot going on. For you trout fishermen, and I know a lot of people are going, trout fishing October, November? Oh, trout fishing is great any time of the year. In North Carolina, the delayed harvest trout waters open back up October the 1st, which means that no trout can be harvested or possessed from these waters between October 1st and 1/2 hour after sunset on June the 2nd, 2017, which is my birthday. Go figure that one. No natural bait may be possessed, and anglers can fish only with artificial lures with one single hook. An artificial lure is defined as a fishing lure that neither contains nor has been treated with any substance that attracts fish by the sense of taste or smell. and of course, with delayed harvest waters opening up, the Wildlife Commission is going to start stocking again. So you can, and I think, can never remember the website to get to, but you can Google in cold water stock in North Carolina. It'll take you to the stocking schedules and the count by counties and with the dates and how many fish they're going to stock and all. And there's a little bit of controversy up in North Carolina about the delayed harvest. I mean, it is a great effort to get people out. But there's a lot of the guys up there say they're stocking waters that don't need to be stocking, and they're hurting the native fish and all. So I think there's going to be a come to Jesus meeting between the two of them shortly to figure out, you know, what part does delayed harvest and where should it be. So anyway, that's just for you guys up North Carolina or South Carolina. I'm going to go trout fishing. I wanted to remind you again, Coastal Conservation Alliance is having a banquet in York County, October the 21st. That's events at Manchester, 1965 Cinema Drive in Rock Hill. You can go to the CCA website and get more information there. Don't forget the 2016-2017 public drawing waterfowl hunts applications are out there. I'm going to remind you this week. I'll remind you one more time. The applications are due Monday, October 31st. So you'll need to make sure you get those applications in, and I'm going to apply this year. I've been saying that for a few years. I've got my little sticky card on my computer, so I'm gonna try to get out there and do that. The second annual Palmetto Classic at the National Wild Turkey Federation Palmetto Shooting Complex is going to happen November the 5th, 2016. It's a 100-target sporting clays open. Registration that day from 8 a.m. to 11. Shooters must be on the course by 11 a.m. Scorecards must be in by 1 p.m. $50 for a youth, $70 for adult. They have, I don't know, 8 or 9 divisions from senior varsity men, ladies, JV, middle school. 5-stand warm-ups are available, 2-man flurry competitions, mulligans. I thought that was a golf term, but I guess we have mulligans wherever you want it. And then, if you want to sponsor a station, there's an opportunity for you to sponsor a station on the course. So, anyway, that's a good one. And I encourage you to go take advantage of that Palmetto Shooting Complex. It is yours. It's mine. Does cost you a little bit to shoot around in sporting clays, but I shot both courses, and both of them are excellent courses. The Gator Trout Tournament 2016 from Hadrill's Point down in Charleston. It's going to be October the 17th to November the 13th. It's a 4-week tournament. Registration fee is $20 a week. And they go through the calculation. I don't want to bore you with the details. Anglers may fish other tournaments while participating in this tournament. Winners are announced each week on Tuesday. Angler must follow all laws and all, you know, the whole thing. But you can get more information. Contact Scott Hammond down at Hadrill's. And he can give you all the information you need on that one. And at this time of the year, it is, you know, spotted sea trout. They are on. And hopefully soon, I might see if I can catch a few myself. The National Wild Turkey Federation, the Piedmont chapter in Union, South Carolina, is having their banquet October the 22nd, 2016 at 6 p.m. at the Main Street Junction. That's at 107 East Main Street in Union, South Carolina. A good organization to get behind and support for certain. And then one, just a fun one that you hear a lot about, it's Denver Downs. Denver Downs Farm, it's the 13th year as an Ag Tourism Center for South Carolina. And it's right here in the upstate. And the biggest draw they have is corn maze, which I've never been in one, but I understand it's really fun. But they've just, that's kind of their main draw, but they have all sorts of stuff. Tube slide, corn cannon, hay rides. It's a 10-acre corn maze, a cow train, children's zip line, pig races, cornhole, rat race rollers, just campfire and s'mores. Now, there you go. And a lot of you say s'mores. What is, okay, s'mores. You have to have honey grahams. You have to have the big marshmallows, and you have to have Hershey's original chocolate. Chocolate, not fruit, chocolate. You know, a couple years ago, somebody in Washington said we need to replace the chocolate with fruit. And I'm like, oh, no. And anyway, it's real simple. You roast the marshmallows, put your honey grahams. The marshmallow gets hot, stick it in there, slap that Hershey chocolate, mash them together real good. That's a s'more. No, it's not something you put on your diet. It's something you treat yourself with when you're good. So anyway, get out. That's Denver Downs Farms and all the other information. Now's the time to get out and enjoy the fall in South Carolina. Hang on, we'll be back with a lot of good interviews the rest of this show. Okay, folks, the weather is perfect. I mean, you could not ask for a better time of the year to get outdoors. I got an email from the Palmetto Conservation Foundation with a few updates on the Palmetto Trail, and I started looking at it, and I was like, this is great stuff. I need to get Mary on the phone. So Mary Rowe has joined us again on Woods and Water, South Carolina. Mary, welcome back.
Thank you so much for having me again.
You know, we talked, I think, last year about this time, and we were dealing with all the flooding we'd had, and now we're dealing with Hurricane Matthew. You told me you've been able to get to some of the trails and all. Give us kind of a report on what you're finding on the lower part, or the part you can get to from the Midlands on down to the coast.
Okay, well, ironically, our Lowcountry trail coordinator is named Matthew. So all week we're saying, Matthew, you're wreaking havoc on your own trails that you maintain. But little joking aside, Matthew did get out yesterday.
Okay.
He started at the Fort Jackson Passage and worked his way down, popping in and out of the trails all the way down to Watery.
Okay.
And what he found at Fort Jackson was a lot of trees down across the trail that are going to take some chainsaw work. A lot of debris and so on. He got down to Watery because we were able to just complete a week and a half ago a new suspension bridge
that
was put in because of flooding and water that normally during the spring would wipe out, would prohibit the trail from crossing and so on at the Watery section.
Right.
He was able to get down to Watery to a point. He said that he came across a lot of larger trees down that are going to take some, more than just him and a chainsaw. It's going to be a crew that'll have to go out and do that. But he wasn't able to get to the suspension bridge just because of the high standing water. He tried two different approaches, and so we're going to have to let that recede. And then, of course, down in Ondo, where it's right there on the intercoastal, it's going to take us a little time to get down there. We need to respect what's happening with getting people back on the down in the low country, so we'll probably attend to that if we can later this week.
Okay, so I guess what you'll be posting updates on the palmettoconservation.org website about trail conditions.
Yeah, we will. We'll start doing that today.
Okay.
Matthew got back into town late last night, and we spoke. So you're hearing what I know firsthand, and this is, really where we're at this point. So we'll start posting that. What I can ask and appeal to your listeners, if anyone wants to come out and volunteer, anyone that wants to spend a Saturday or a workday Wednesday with us, this is going to take well over 6 weeks to really attend. And if you have some free time, boy, could we use volunteers right now.
You know, that was the next question I was going to ask you is, is there an opportunity here for people to get involved and help clean up the trail? And there you go, folks. If you if you have a Wednesday you want to donate, if you had have a Saturday, get a hold of Mary, the Palmetto Conservation Foundation, and donate. Give back to the state because, there's a lot of people who've gone and done a lot of work to put the trail in. There are a lot of companies. You mentioned the suspension bridge over Watery. That was funded by South Carolina Electric and Gas. It's your trail to use, and on the flip side, it's your trail to help keep up.
Absolutely. This is South Carolina's statewide trail. And when we're done, anyone of any ability, really, you don't have to be a, you know, an avid hiker. You can be a beginner hiker. This is the perfect trail to go for a day hike. Or if you really want to do something, get out and you could actually be a through hiker. And that'll take about a month. But, you know, we've been making a lot of great progress. We have so much great momentum. We have just put in another bridge over at the Enneree Passage, a great donation from Dominion. We just cut the ribbon 2 weeks ago on that, and that's it's just a stunning bridge, again, where hikers would not be able to cross this creek bed when spring comes along or significant rains. And now, I mean, these two bridges really allow year-round access on those particular two trails.
And you know, you mentioned these two bridges. You've got one down at Watery and one over here at the Indian Creek Enneree Passage.
Yep.
You know, those trails, they not only get you up out of the water, they keep you away from snakes, too.
Yeah, exactly. I can't tell you how many people, especially when we are having a group of volunteers, the number one thing, where are the snakes? And I have to tell you, maybe, and I don't want to jinx myself, but out of all the staff at PCF, when I'm out there, I haven't come across a snake yet. Well, so I don't know why, but, you know, again, we've never had an incident with anyone harmed by a snake. We really try to educate everybody. But, you know, let's go back to your original conversation.
Go ahead.
This is the premier time to get outside the trail.
Oh, yes.
And now, I mean, you know, given the weather, and you don't want to go Fort Jackson down right now, but let's start at the Peak to Prosperity Passage going over that beautiful broad river.
Yes.
Just, you know, 35 minutes from downtown Columbia, you can be on a stunning rail trail bed. It is just beautiful.
Yep.
And then, you know, of course, the upstate, we held 2 weeks ago a beautiful hike on the Saluda Passage. I mean, you can't ask for better vistas and better, just the foliage starting to change up there.
Yep.
The upstate trails, I encourage people to take a day trip, get up there. But if you live in the upstate, get on those trails. They're stunning.
They are. Well, you got something I was on down in the email that I got. You got a pancakes and family hike on the Palmetto Trail. Tell us a little bit about that one. Is that still going to happen?
It certainly is. That is at the Peak to Prosperity Passage. We have engaged a great group statewide called Hike It Baby, really getting young families out to introduce nature to children. I don't know if you know this, but by the age of three, if you are not introduced comfortably to the outdoors, you begin to cultivate a fear for the outdoors. And so our goal is to really introduce young families, have a nice morning. I'm going to be cooking the pancakes.
Uh-oh.
And then we'll have a nice about 1.5 hour hike, really pointing out some of the key plants and sort of the fauna of that particular trail.
Very nice. And, you know,
and it's open to all families. I mean, we just happen to engage this core group who will be in attendance, but we encourage anybody outside of Hike It Baby to come and join us that day.
You know, it says in here this is a free event for PCF members and $10 for mom members. How does somebody become a member of PCF?
Very easily. Just visit our website. We have beginning as a student member all the way up to family and then higher levels of giving. It's all there on our new website. Just click on membership and you fill it out and you become a member in about 1 minute.
There you go.
So there's real value. We have a lot of events, and obviously the biggest event to all our members, which is free, is National Trails Day.
Yep.
And that is in the first week in June, and you and I will talk about that another point because there's so much going on. But that's a huge weekend event that's free to our members.
Well, you wanted to talk a little bit of something about the Conservation Corps that you got started.
Yeah, I'm really, really proud of this new addition to Palmetto Conservation Foundation. We had worked for a good 8 months applying for a federal grant, and never before has South Carolina had a Conservation Corps that will focus on trails. And we were awarded the federal funding for this.
Okay.
They started about 2.5 weeks ago. They'll be housed right now out of our outdoor leadership school in Spartanburg. And last week, they started some trail work, cutting new trail at Cross State Park.
Okay.
Finished yesterday, but they are also part of their commitment to being the Conservation Corps for South Carolina. They have to respond to disaster. So they're on their way to help down in the low country. So we're going to have them. They've gone through some massive training in the last two to three days to
okay.
be able to respond. But let me just say, this
sure.
is a huge, huge thing for South Carolina to have a group of 15 young men and women focused on building trails, not just the Palmetto Trail, but other trails, too, in our state parks. So it's really, really great for the state of South Carolina.
That is. That is really cool.
Yeah.
Where was this stuff when we were coming along?
I don't know, because I certainly would have done it.
You better believe it.
I'm looking at these young men and women, and they range from 18 to 25, and I said, boy, would I love to have had that opportunity. You know, they get a very small wage for their work, but they really get to learn
right.
about conservation. And they get college relief on their tuition.
Very nice.
It's really, really great. And, you know, it was a real long shot for South Carolina to get this. And
okay.
I have to commend our staff who really, really wrote a phenomenal grant. So that's why we were awarded. So, you know, we are a small staff, only five of us, and
right.
we go statewide. And, again, I will put the call out. We need volunteers. We need help maintaining and working on the trail.
Well, and you can find, I guess, the volunteer work days. You'll post updates on the trail. That's all going to be at palmettoconservation.org. Mary, it's
yes.
always nice to talk to you. I appreciate your willingness to talk back to me every once in a while, and hopefully I'll
all
see
right.
you on
well,
the trail.
Maybe. All right.
You take
well,
care.
Listen, thank you so much.
Yes, ma'am, and like I said, anytime you got things going on, just let me know. You know, I think it's been over a year ago now that I met a young man at the National Wild Turkey Federation at a South Carolina Department of Natural Resources Take One, Make One Deer Clinic. He told me about some things they were doing at Clemson, and I said, let's stay in touch. We did, and I'm happy to welcome Brett Staton to Woods and Water, South Carolina. Brett, how are you this morning?
I'm great, Roger. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Happy to be here.
Yeah, yeah, it's been really busy, both for me and for you, and I'm glad we got a chance to do this like we talked about last year. And you're really doing some exciting things, and one of the focuses of Woods and Water South Carolina is getting the next generation involved in the outdoors, whether it's hunting, fishing, hiking, camping. And you're actually focusing on a little older age group in the college age, but which is exciting. But take just a second, introduce yourself, and tell us what you do down at Clemson.
All right. My name is Brett Staton. I'm originally from the great state of Kentucky. Grew up there, deer hunting, turkey hunting, ducks, dove, you name it. And eventually got a degree in wildlife management from Eastern Kentucky, which led me to grad school at Clemson, where my degree kind of focuses on the human dimensions, economics, and policy side of conservation. But we're doing research with the South Carolina Department of Natural Resources. We got two different research projects with them, actually. They're similar but a little different, both focused on hunter recruitment and retention. How do we get more people hunting, you know, increase license sales, that kind of stuff. We're focusing one project on kids in particular and another one on college students.
Cool. And I tell you, with this weather we're having and the cool mornings and all, it shouldn't take a whole lot of pride in to get people outdoors and hunting in this time of the year. So if you're intermingling with people in October in South Carolina, what a better time of the year to encourage them to get outside.
Yeah, once you get that fall crisp in the air, I know I get the itch to get out in a tree stand, so I'm sure a lot of other people do as well.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we talked a little bit before today about what we're going to talk about, and I cover a lot of what Pittman Robertson does every year when the money is kind of doled out to the states. I say how much South Carolina's got, but you probably got a different perspective on that, the financial aspects of hunting and fishing. So take a few minutes and talk about the money that's required to come in and the cost of conservation?
Okay, yeah, I can definitely do that. Well, basically, conservation in North America is funded from two main sources. As you mentioned there, the Pittman-Robertson, which is, of course, a 10 to 11% excise tax on firearms and ammunition that basically goes into a federal pot and then is distributed back to state agencies based on a certain number of criteria. And then the other main source is hunting licenses. Most state agencies, with the exception of a few who have changed things up recently, don't receive any state tax dollars. So their entire operating budget comes from hunting licenses and then that excise tax on guns and hunting equipment that's distributed back to the states. And that system has worked wonderfully in North America since the 1930s. That funding system has helped restore white-tailed deer, turkeys, wood ducks, you name it. There was probably some sort of restoration effort that was funded by hunters needed to bring those animals back. But that system is in a little bit of trouble now as hunting licenses since the 70s have shown a decline. They've plateaued a little bit in recent years, but with the population going up, you'd like to see the sale of hunting licenses going up, sure. And unfortunately that has not been happening the last couple of years.
You mentioned the restoration of deer and turkeys and all that. I read a story the other day, I think West Virginia, in conjunction with the Rocky Mountain Elk Federation, is fixing to reintroduce elk up there.
Yeah, elk has been, there's been several successful reintroduction projects all through the kind of the southeast Appalachians. I know Kentucky, where I'm from originally, yeah. Was one of the first states east of the Mississippi to do a major elk restoration on reclaimed strip mines up there. And they're having incredible success with their elk populations. They're getting big, mature bulls. And they actually have a large enough population that they've implemented hunting seasons kind of based on a lottery quota system.
Yeah.
So I'm 0 for 10, unfortunately, but I'll keep applying.
Do you get preference points, or is it just purely lottery from year to year?
They don't do preference points. It's okay. It's purely lottery for year to year, but they do try to keep most of the tags in-state, which is
okay.
Nice.
Yeah. Well, there's hope.
Yep. One day.
One day.
Well, yep.
You mentioned the two programs you've got running now. You're working with the TOMO program with DNR, and you're working on some college stuff. Take a minute and tell us what you're doing with the TOMO program.
The TOMO program, TOMO, for those of you that don't know, stands for Take One, Make One. And it's DNR's mentored hunting program, basically where you pair a kid up with a parent who might not have hunting experience or be able to get the kid out in the field. And they can attend mentored hunts all around the state, some of it on state lands. Some of it, TOMO's lucky enough to have private landowners open their land up and get these kids out hunting. But basically, like I said, a kid is paired up with a mentor and goes on a hunt. They do deer hunts, turkey hunts, squirrel hunts, you name it. You can hunt it through the TOMO program. And it's a very educational experience, very hands-on. Hunting is one of those things you really can't learn unless you get out there and do it.
Right.
And for kids who might not have the means or the connections to do it on their own, the TOMO program is a great way to get involved with that. And a good way to first get involved in the TOMO program is through the hunting clinics that DNR does around the state for kids. They do about five a year.
Mm-hmm.
We just had a deer clinic in Sumter. We've got another deer clinic coming up on November 8th in Georgetown. If anybody on the coast is interested in that, I highly recommend it.
Okay. Yeah, those are good. I've been to two of them down at the National Wild Turkey Federation, and it's so hands-on. I mean, it is
yeah,
driven by getting those kids with their hands dirty.
Exactly. You're exactly right about that. Like I said, hunting's one of those things. You can watch all the YouTube videos or read whatever you want. Until you get out there and do it, you don't really understand it. But like you said, these clinics are incredibly hands-on. The conservation officers at DNR that run the clinic do a tremendous job. There's typically four different stations at each clinic. You do get to do some shooting, so there's all the equipment and gear you needed is provided by DNR as well.
Mm-hmm.
But you get to practice shooting a rifle. They have a couple different types of tree stands, safety harnesses, all the gear. You can test out a lot of the gear, practice climbing trees, get up in a tree stand, see what it looks like up there. They do a session on cooking, which I usually take notes on those sessions too. My cooking can use some work. But then they do another clinic on field dressing, and then another incredibly hands-on clinic where they simulate a blood trail following a deer through the woods, and then they go over a lot of the laws and regulations. And it's basically a one-day crash course with all the basics you need to really get started deer hunting.
And that's a great program. I'm a Tomo mentor. I haven't been able to fit in be a mentor yet this year, but I'm hoping there's a chance I'll get to later on the season. But you're doing something in your research kind of focuses on an older age group, the college age. That'd be 18 to mid-20s or so. And I've often, when we talked about this, I started thinking, you know, those kids, you know, they have a little time. They probably have a little money, and they have transportation, which is something that a 12-year-old kid, you know, he's totally at the mercy of somebody who's willing to take him. So talk just a few minutes about what you're seeing in the college age Tomo participation or what y'all are trying to do down there at Clemson.
Yeah. So you hit the nail right on the head there talking about a lot of the good positive reasons why college students could be a potential market to get some new hunters out of. And really when we talk about the hunter recruitment and retention piece or puzzle, there's not one easy answer. And a lot of other people have looked at, you know, various demographics. I know women are the fastest growing group of hunters in the country, but there's been research done on locavores, you know, people upset with the industrial food complex and where their food comes from, and trying to hunt and get, you know, organic free range meat, and it doesn't get any more organic or free range than a wild animal.
Sure.
You've had people such as the action sports group, you know, the people already out there climbing mountains and stuff like that. Could be a huge group of hunters, but nobody had explicitly researched college students.
Okay.
So that was what we're doing at Clemson. And what we found, like you said, is it's a potential huge market for people interested in getting involved in hunting. So we've surveyed like over 5,000 students. We've had respond to surveys from both Clemson and Kansas State University.
Okay.
Basically what we found is that about half of them have never been hunting before, but of those half, another half of those are interested in hunting or would be willing to consider hunting in the future. So we were blown away by those numbers. It was the same way at both schools. There's a lot of students interested in hunting, but the question becomes, how do you get them hunting?
Sure.
And that's kind of what our research focuses on.
How do you get them hunting?
That's a good question. We partnered with DNR last year. We had, for the first time ever, they offered a clinic very similar to the youth clinics, the same layout and everything like that. They offered it to college students at Clemson for the first time on the condition that the students had never been hunting before.
Okay.
At the youth clinics, you get kids that with a little more of a hunting background, but DNR, for the older group, really wanted to focus on kids that had never been hunting before.
Okay.
So we filled the clinic up last year. We had about 20 students come out. We've got it full again this year. We'll be doing it on October 22nd here at Clemson.
Okay.
And then we've added another mentored hunt, kind of like similar to the hunts in the Tomo program at the National Wild Turkey Federation. But programs like that is really, I think, how you tap in to this this market of college students and get them hunting. Through our research, we've looked into the biggest barriers that prevent people from hunting, and we kind of separated the college students into hunters and non-hunters.
Okay.
As you can imagine, the hunters, their biggest barrier to hunting is they lack the free time required to hunt. We touched on that at the beginning of this interview. Another issue you see with college students is a lot of them have moved away from the area they typically hunt.
Okay.
And they don't have time to go back and hunt again. As an agency, when you're looking at that, there's not really much you can do to break down those barriers. But when you look at the barriers experienced by non-hunters, I think out of the top five biggest barriers, four of those, there are things that state agencies can do to begin knocking down those barriers. The biggest barrier was that they've not completed a hunter's education course, and they lack the knowledge and skills required to hunt.
Okay.
Our research is kind of indicating that most of these college students, a lot of their friends hunt. They didn't really indicate that not having anywhere to go or not having anyone to hunt with is an issue.
Wow.
Their biggest issue is not completing a hunter's education course, a lack of knowledge, required to hunt or prepare game meat, and the costs.
Okay.
So through programs like what we're implementing here at Clemson, you can provide a place to hunt or provide the education they need to be confident. And that way, when a friend does invite them out, they're not intimidated, you know, because they don't know what they're doing.
Sure.
I think that's a big part of it. People don't want to go out there and, you know, look like an idiot or something. not that anyone would judge them, and you know, hunters are good at welcoming people into the fold.
Yes.
But it can be intimidating. You're not just going to walk out into the woods with a gun and try to start hunting. So you do need to have some sort of introduction to that. And like I said, I know Clemson's doing it now with the programs we got going on. Where I went to undergrad in Kentucky is also doing it. So I think with this research, we're really going to start to see these programs catching on at colleges around the country.
Well, that's great. Anything I can do here to help you, you please let me know. That's an additional area that I'd love to devote some time to, is the college age kids. But you, you've got some stuff coming up, some events and fundraisers. I'd love to take the last minute or so and talk about those events.
Yeah, we do have a few events coming up. As I mentioned, we've got the Clemson Clinic on October 22nd. That's full, unfortunately. We could add some names to the waiting list if any Clemson students out there are interested.
Okay.
And then we've got the Mentored Hunt on October 29th. But also on October 22nd, the Clemson Shotgun Team is having their fundraiser at the National Wild Turkey Federation Shooting Complex. I'm also, as part of my graduate assistantship, I also teach a few of the undergrad shooting classes here at Clemson. I'm involved with the shotgun team. So if you guys want to come out and support the team and shoot some sporting clays, that is Saturday, October 22nd at 9 a.m., and we hope to see some of you guys there.
And if you've never been, you've been and I've been, I shot both the North and the South Sporting Clays course a couple weeks ago. That is an incredible facility down there.
It is. It's absolutely amazing, and I'm excited to get back down there.
Yeah. Well, Brett, I appreciate you making time to be on. We just kind of scratched the surface of this. Let's make an effort to keep in contact as the fall goes through, and then maybe next spring let's get on and do another segment and get a little deeper into these numbers.
Sounds good to me. I look forward to it.
Okay, Brett. Thanks, and have a great day.
Thank you. You too.
Good. It's that time of the year. We're going to get out of the woods and off the water and spend a little time in the air. And joining us is Jamie Mitchell from the Collings Foundation. Jamie, thank you for taking time out of your day to be here on Woods and Water, South Carolina.
Thanks for talking with me. I really appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. It's kind of been hectic, but we're going to fit you in and because y'all are coming to Greenville Downtown Airport. So take just a second, introduce, because you're from last year, you're new with the Collings Foundation, and tell us what the Collings Foundation does and what y'all are bringing to Greenville.
Well, I'm Jamie Mitchell, and I'm actually the flight coordinator for Collings Foundation Wings of Freedom. And what we do is, since 1989, we've toured the entire country with World War II aircraft, and we let people do walkthrough tours and go for flight experiences and even do flight training. And so when we're coming to Greenville, we're going to be bringing a B-25 bomber, a B-17, a B-24, which is the world's only flying B-24, and it's a combat veteran, as well as our brand new P-51, which is actually a TF-51 that was modified by Temco, so it's full dual control. We can even do flight training in that, and hopefully we'll have some veterans come out, share their stories, and get some kids out there, too.
Well, I got to ask you, where's Betty Jane at these days?
Well, you know, she's been working really hard for almost 10 years, so we had to send her back home to get some more work. But she's my favorite, and I miss her so much. But Toulouse Nuts is incredible. It flies so beautifully. It looks just as nice as it flies. And we just won Grand Champion and the Golden Wrench for our restoration at Air Venture in Oshkosh over the summer. So it's a really special plane.
Yeah, I saw that. I was like, well, that's pretty good to go to Oshkosh with practically a mint condition P-51 Mustang and win that award is pretty good.
No, we're so proud of it. And it's such a great, you know, it's a different kind of Mustang because it is West Virginia National Guard. So it's a post-war paint scheme. So it's a little bit different than people expect. But unlike Betty Jane, since it's a D model, it has that iconic look that people are, you know, that's what they want to fly in. Betty Jane, I love so much. But, you know, Toulouse Nuts is fantastic. And so far, Everybody's really enjoyed flying in it. But, you know, the B-24 is my favorite plane out here, so I always want to talk about that one. Because, you know, it's the only one left on almost 19,000 built, and that sure. is, like, the most produced multi-engine military aircraft ever. So it doesn't get a lot of love, but, you know, generally, if you served on an aircraft during the war, you served on a B-24. So I'm hoping more people come out and want to go for flights than that one, or at least just, you know, check it out because... You know, when that one's not flying anymore, I don't think there's going to be another one out there, you know?
Yeah, you don't hear of any restorations on B-24s. There's just none going on.
It's kind of like a little bulldog. It's really ugly looking, but it's pretty amazing once you get to
it. I was just fixing to say, it's not the prettiest airplane to look at, but boy, did it do a job for us in World War II.
Yeah, it's really awesome. And I'm just, you know, I'm looking forward to coming out there to see you guys. And just get as many people out there as we can. And I'm just really hoping, you know, to have as many veterans as we can out there. So if you know a veteran, you know, bring them on out. Because, you know, my predecessor talked about all these great guys he met that served during the war.
Sure.
And this year I've been out on the road and you know, we got someone who's like 94, 95, 96. And, you know, they're the young ones from the war and I hardly see them. So, you know, yeah, they're just really special to us when we do have them out here. So hoping to share this with them.
Well, when are you coming to Greenville? Give us the dates. Give us times that people can come out and do walkthroughs. And then tell us how people can get on the list to do an actual flying flight with you guys.
Well, we're going to be there next week. And I don't have the exact times with me, but generally we're out at the airport from about 9 to 5 each day. But you can call our main office. But, you know, the best thing to do is just to go to callingsfoundation.org, which is C-O-L-L-I-N-G-S. And then you can find all the information, the address we're going to be at, all of our prices and everything. And then you can call us or email us, and then you can book a flight right there. And all of our flights, they're 30-minute, you know, generally, you don't even have to sit the entire time. If you want to, you can. But okay. You can actually get up and explore the entire aircraft and sit in all the crew positions.
Okay.
And, you know, if you really, really feel adventurous, you need to take some flight lessons in either the B-25 or the B-51.
Okay.
And they're both pretty awesome. So.
Oh, I can imagine. I don't know that I'll be around. I've been informed I'm going to be at Charleston Southern on the 22nd for a football game, which, you know, ranks right up there with going to the doctor for me. Because I'd much rather be up here. But I will try to get out there and at least put a face with a name now that I've talked to you on the phone. But thanks for taking the time out of your day to be here. Collingsfoundation.org, is that right? Yes, Collingsfoundation.org is where you can find more information. And look, you guys, you're almost at the end of the tour for this year, aren't you?
Less than a month ago, but, you know, this year has been incredible. You know, with the B-25 rejoining us for the entire year, entire touring years, and with the new Mustang, it's just been super amazing. Really good turnout everywhere we've gone. So hopefully, you know, time will pass quickly and we'll be back over here again at the same time next year. But, you know, we only get a short break before the next tour starts up, but I'm already, you know, disappointed that it's ending. So I hope I'm going to be back. And I really hope I'm going to meet you out there.
Yeah.
So I think we're going to have a good time.
We will. We'll welcome back to Greenville when you get here. And thanks to the Collings Foundation for keeping living history like this accessible to people that normally would have no idea how or where to go to see an airplane like a B-24.
I know. This is going to be awesome. So thank you so much. And I can't wait to meet you.
Very good. Thank you for doing this. And we'll see you soon.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Well, I have to say, Jamie was kind of nervous on that interview. She was struggling to get to the airport to boot to their next, somewhere up in Virginia, I think. And we were sitting here in the studio waiting on her to record that session, and we had to pack that in. I think I talked to her just a second after. She said, "I'm sorry it was so rushed." I said, "Oh, that's fine." We were packing it in on both ends, and she did a great job. They will be here October the 21st from 2 o'clock. Until October the 23rd till 4 o'clock. Walkthrough times from 2 to 4 on Friday, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Saturday, and 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Sunday. I told her I'd let you guys know about that. And you heard you could take rides in the... What a great opportunity to get out there and touch living history. You know, that's the only flying B-24 Liberator out there. And they belt some smoke when they start up. Don't be afraid. They're not going to catch fire. They do burn some smoke. They do burn some oil when they get up there and going. But anyway, that's the Greenville Downtown Airport. I'm going to be there on Friday. Work that out this week with my wife. We're going to be heading out. In fact, next week, I'm not going to be here again. I'll be at a football game. Yeehaw. I know everybody just loves football, and this time of the year, I'd much rather be on the water out in the woods on a Saturday. But anyway, it's Charleston Southern's homecoming. My daughter's there, and like a good dad, that's where I'm going to be with her. So next week, we're going to talk to the sporting chef, Scott Lazeth, out of California. He's got his own TV show. We're going to talk about how to cook your venison, whatever else he's got for us. So that's going to be most of next show, and it'll be another good one. And pray for me, I'll be at a football game. Now, the good thing about it, it is in Charleston. I could find some time to go fishing. We'll see. I'm good at that. Anyway, I appreciate you being here. Plenty of stuff to do. Don't forget, Collings Foundation is going to be here. You've got a Clemson Shotgun Sports Team fundraiser on the 22nd, again at the Palmetto Shooting Complex in Edgefield. Mary Rowe was telling us about the Palmetto Trail, some of the great upstate parks you can go to. Enjoy the leaves and all. Keep checking on their website about updates on the lower parts. And anyway, from Teddy, if you could kick the person in the pants responsible for most of your trouble, you wouldn't sit for a month. That's Teddy Roosevelt. So, hey, as always, make time to get out there, find some of those back roads, and see South Carolina from a different angle. And as always, don't forget that camera. I'll see you next week here on Woods and Water, South Carolina. Hit me from behind. I'm wrong.